Hey, what's going on, everyone? This is the Life Hacks LA podcast, and this is your host, Stefan, back with another great guest who's going to give us some awesome LA insights. Today, we have on my guy, Matt. He is the owner of Proudly Serving. They went from a humble pop-up, started on his driveway, to an absolute South Bay smash burger sensation, serving up long lines of hungry fans at their first physical location right on the Redondo Beach Pier. He started his business during COVID with no prior professional cooking experience and was able to build a following of passionate Smashburger lover fans in just over a year. They are so popular, they've been featured in local magazines, on the radio, and even on the local news. I love talking to Los Angeles entrepreneurs who were able to build a brand out of nothing and make a bit of noise in this ultra-competitive city. So in this episode, we did it live. I went directly down to Proudly Serving and sat down with Matt right on the amazing Redondo Beach Pier so he could share his whole story with us. Just a heads up, since we are live on location, you might hear a bit of background noise in this interview. Afterwards, be sure to come back so you can hear my special hack for this episode. But for now, enjoy this conversation with Matt from Proudly Serving. What's up, LA Hackers? This is Stefan. So I'm hanging out live on location right here on the Redondo Beach Pier. I'm at my favorite Smashburger spot in the South Bay, Proudly Serving. And we're talking to Matt today, the owner of Proudly Serving. What's going on, Matt?
What is up? Thanks for coming out.
It's awesome to be here, man. It's the first time I've been here where there's not a huge line. We're here before it opens. So So this is awesome. Don't have to wait in line. So Proudly Serving is, you know, just kind of blown up. But before we get into like the history of all that, wanted to know a little bit more about you. Where are you from originally, and how did you make your way to Los Angeles from the South Bay?
So originally from New Jersey. My family is from New York, the Bronx to be exact, but I was raised in Jersey. And so I made my way out here with my wife. We've been dating for a long time, and I honestly never thought I would leave New Jersey, especially at that time, I guess. I always traveled a lot. I've always been well-traveled, but for some reason, I never saw myself living anywhere else, maybe New York City eventually. But my wife at the time, and this is going back to 2006 or so, 2005, she got an opportunity to be a flight attendant. And at that time, it was kind of like new. It was sort of news to me. She wanted to be a flight attendant, and I was like, "Cool, yeah, do it." You know, and we lived right outside Newark Airport, which is one of the busiest airports like in the world. And so I just assumed if she became a flight attendant, she'd be based there, and we would still be living in New Jersey. So, but she came home one day, said she got hired, but. She was going to have to be based in Salt Lake City, Utah. So I was like, wow. And still, I mean, we were dating for 2 years, so not really new in our relationship, but like still like, all right, well, this is real. You know, let's go try this out together. So we moved across country. Probably within like the next 3 months after she got hired. And we lived in Salt Lake City for 3 years. And it was interesting, to say the least.
Yeah.
Beautiful city. Beautiful city.
Salt Lake City.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it's a beautiful place to live. It was an up-and-coming city. You know, I can't even call it a city. It's like a downtown compared to like my whole life running around the streets of New York City. That doesn't even compare. But no matter what, it was really nice. It was a cool experience. It got us out of our like comfort zone. And, but the politics were just not us.
Yeah.
And so, when it comes to being a flight attendant, soon enough you get tenure and you can almost be based anywhere you want. Or you can live anywhere you want and still be based, say, in Salt Lake City. So we had an opportunity to come down to L.A. We sort of fell in love, and we moved here. And she was still working out of Salt Lake City. So she would just hop on a flight, say, at 6 a.m. or 7 a.m., fly to Salt Lake City, start her trip, and it all worked out. So We never looked back.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And specifically, you live in the South Bay. I live in the South Bay. I think we've talked about it before, how awesome the South Bay is. So I wanted to ask you, like, what you know of Los Angeles. What makes the South Bay special to you? Like, why do you continue to live here?
Well, growing up in Jersey, I grew up sort of in a similar area. So the Jersey Shore, where I grew up, is like Point Pleasant, Belmar. Some people will probably be familiar because this is a big, you know, a lot of transplants live in LA. So I'm sure some people from, are listening who grew up in Jersey. And so the South Bay, Hermosa Beach, Redondo Beach, it is quite similar, to where we grew up, but I still am I'm a city person at heart. So I love New York City with all my heart. So I wanted to be fairly close to downtown LA, even though when we moved here, downtown LA was absolutely like in shambles. There was like nothing, but I still needed like some like resemblance of a city nearby just because that's just that's my headspace.
And now it's awesome. So
yeah, exactly.
It doesn't take you long.
Exactly. But I also just need to be near the water, near the ocean.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It's not like I actually go to the beach that often. Mm-hmm. But I just love being down here. The community, it feels like one of the few like actual communities of LA.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I drive through all these different areas of LA, like mid-city and stuff, I can't picture a community in that area.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I'm sure there's people that live there forever and they would tell me otherwise. But here, it's like you don't really need to be here unless you need to be here. So like no one just drives through the South Bay. Like you sort of have to have a reason to come down here. And they call it the bubble for a reason. You know, people sort of live here and don't leave. You know, I'm very different than that. I'm all over the place all the time. But I still love coming back home to the beach cities.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I love the South Bay. I love being by the water. There is a South Bay bubble. It's a lot more mellow and chill out here. And as far as like working by the water or living by the water, your restaurant is literally on the Redondo Beach Pier.
Yep.
So you definitely have reached that goal in life. So let's talk about Proudly Serving. So you guys are like South Bay smash burger sensation. Me and my whole family love smash burgers. So
cool.
I heard about you when you were a pop-up. And now you've got this physical location. But can you tell us a little bit about the story, like how it started, what the pop-up experience was like, and you know, just how the whole thing got going, and also what you did before.
For sure. So my wife and I ran a PR firm for like about 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
We specialized in the hospitality industry. So working with restaurants, bars, breweries, chefs. And obviously when COVID hit, that all can I curse or?
Oh yeah, go ahead.
That all just like went to shit.
Yeah.
You know, overnight, half of our clients either closed, or in the other half, most of them didn't need PR. They were just trying to survive themselves.
Yeah, you know? That's one of the first things to go. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, cause we're a luxury. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not a necessity whatsoever. I mean, I feel PR is a necessity, but a lot of people don't feel that way.
Well, enough people can't go to the restaurant at that
exactly.
time, then they can't really spend money advertising.
Exactly. So I totally get it. I got it. You know, there was no hard feelings really with anyone that we had to say goodbye to. But as soon as that happened, you know, I had to start thinking about what the next chapter was in our life. But, you know, for the last like 5-6 years, my goal was to open up a restaurant eventually. That's been a goal of mine.
Without any personal restaurant experience? I mean, besides advertising and PR?
Exactly.
Wow.
Now,
were you a chef at home?
Like, no, nothing of the sorts. I mean, I cook at home.
Yeah.
I never made anything that I thought would ever be on a menu that people would enjoy. No, I enjoyed it.
Selling one thing, right? That people would pay for.
Exactly. Yeah. That was like the farthest from my mind. I never thought I'd actually be in the kitchen.
Cooking. Isn't it crazy? Like, so as bad as COVID was and just how surreal that whole 2 year experience was, so many people came out of that with like a different direction in life or some type of positive habit or, you know, a lot of people did come out with something, you know?
Totally. It's like fight or flight.
Yeah.
You know, like you get backed into a corner and you have to figure out how to get out of that corner.
Yeah, I got closer with my family. You know, when it first happened, I'll be honest, I was like, they're going to drive me nuts. But I actually got much closer to them and was able to compartmentalize my life a little better because I was so work focused. And I was like, you know, this is important, spend time with family. So that's how it kind of helped me that year and a half we were in the house.
Yeah. When that first happened, what was like March of 2020 or whatever, my son was like 6 months at the time or 6 to 8 months. And, you know, it was kind of neat because we got to see all of his milestones. Every single day. We hung out every single day. You know, I didn't have to go to work. We were at home for over a year. Yeah. So I got to see all these cool things that most parents, working parents, miss.
Yeah.
You know? So that was neat. So that was one benefit of the whole COVID.
But how did you transition from, the business was suffering, the PR business, and you didn't really have much of a chef background, according to what you're saying. So how did the burger place first appear or pop up? Or,
you know, I still have a great understanding of flavors and what tastes good, and how to make something taste good if I really put like a lot of effort into it. Sometimes I'm just cooking at home and I know I can cook something really well. I just either don't have the time to go get certain ingredients or like, you know, it's like this life of, you know, sort of like a rat race. I'm just trying to make something quick, you know? So I live in sort of like an 8-person like townhouse, like 8 units.
Yeah.
And during COVID, we all became really close because we're all just locked down. We had this kind of a communal area in the back where we all sort of, we became our own bubble.
You can see.
Exactly. Yeah. So we all hung out almost every single day, day and night. It was pretty wild. And we would just like kind of like cook for each other. We had one person would make something one day and like another person would make something another day and we'd have drinks and, you know, it was a wild little time. And one night, I just made smash burgers and it was basically like my first time ever making them. I always made just regular like pub style burgers, like a 6-ounce thick, juicy burger. That was like kind of like the thing that I was into, that I've been into for a while. And the smash burger thing was kind of like coming up. But the first time, like when I heard of a smash burger and I learned about what it was, it sort of brought me back to Jersey, a place called White Manna, which is like a little tiny diner that pretty much does a smash burger, but they never called it a smash burger.
Yeah.
So I kind of grew up loving that burger. And I just thought about that and then this new smash burger craze. And I had like a small little tiny like flat top and I was like, all right, I'm going to cook you guys burgers tonight. And my neighbor who was like just really into food, he was like, dude, that was like the best burger I've ever had. But in my mind, I was like, honestly, that was kind of shitty. I was like, that I can make, if you think that was good, let me like, you know, go back to the drawing board and see like what I can do
better when I really focus on it.
Yeah. So like I had this little like area of my house, a rooftop to be exact, where you can kind of like be in solitude. So I went to Target. I got this small like 17-inch griddle, Blackstone griddle. And I went up there and so I basically just started getting to work. I said, you know what? I'm going to try to like pay homage to this burger joint in New Jersey that I grew up loving. And so it took me a sort of a while to get to that, flavor profile. And now it's been so long since I've even like eaten anywhere in Jersey or whatever. So I had to remember even like what was on that burger. I don't even know if they have pickles or anything, but that style of burger is exactly what we're serving on the PS burger, which I love, is just like a sauce, onions, grilled onions and pickles.
It's hard to compete with nostalgia. So that's
exactly, that's yeah, good exactly. To, so like, and, but I've never like smashed a burger before at that point. I'm like, I just always, like I said, cooked like juicy, big, like pubby kind of burgers. Uh-huh. And so I'm like, how the heck do you even do this? So I'm like, so I'm getting a grill or griddle as hot as possible. Yeah. I'm watching videos, you know, of course. And my first attempt, came out okay, but the flavor profile was a little off. I always knew what bun I wanted. I didn't know like the meat ratio, so I had to go to like certain like restaurant supply stores and figure that out. At first I was like, oh, should I do a whole blend? But then I'm like, this is such a simple burger that just like that's like too much, you know? Like I'm way overthinking it, you know? So eventually I got like a 80-20 Angus chuck and boom, like that was it. I always knew that I wanted a simple cheese, but I knew I didn't want a Kraft cheese because that's like, even with shitty American cheese, Kraft is still like pretty bad. Yeah. So I'm like, I wanted like a sort of a better quality. So I was able to find that. I made my first attempt at making a special sauce came out awesome. I just needed to like kind of figure out the ratios of each ingredient, but I loved it. So I was like, all right, now I just need that's already done. But even like during my first real pop-up in my driveway, I was still serving like a really kind of like shitty pickle. And okay. I was so bummed about it. And eventually at...
So this pop-up was, you said it in your driveway?
In my driveway.
So would other people come besides the 8 people who lived in your building?
Yeah. So like after about 12, 13, 14 attempts, I bit into the burger and I was like, that's it. That's the burger. And probably like... a week later is when I had my first pop-up. And what I did was, like, it was sort of like guerrilla-style marketing. Mm-hmm. I jumped on the Nextdoor app, which, like, I knew everybody was on at the time because, you know, besides Zoom. But the Nextdoor app, that's where almost how everybody in our community was communicating. And so I made a post on there. I made a post on, like, the Redondo Beach Facebook community, blah, blah, blah. And then obviously I had Instagram, but we didn't have that many followers at the time. So I knew Nextdoor and Facebook was going to be the main draw to get the community out. Mm-hmm. I wasn't expecting people to drive anywhere farther than like a 3 mile radius.
Yeah.
Especially for their first pop-up. So I promoted on there. Probably had about like 30 people come out for the first pop-up. I only had like maybe 50 burgers available, maybe. Yeah,
that's good.
Maybe. I can't even remember now. But definitely sold out. I don't think I had fries the first pop-up. But then, obviously I would get feedback almost instantly from people, strangers from the community, like, wow, that burger was incredible, blah, blah, blah. And so that truly gave me the confidence to continue to do it. Even though like during that first pop-up, like there was about 10 people in line and I was just by myself and I turn around and cause you know, they're all staring at you.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I am not used to this part of hospitality. Uh-huh. I'm used to being in the background. So I wasn't ever used to being the main focus. So I turned around and initially I was like, I'm never doing this again. Because I just, the amount of eyes staring at me, waiting for me to mess up or do something wrong. And like, I was like, I'm not prepared for this. Or having people wait too long, that kind of stuff.
All that's running through your mind while you're still stressing trying to get the food out, right?
And I'm like, I'm just like, oh God, this is terrible. But the feedback alone is what pushed me to continue to do it. So they're like, hey, when's the next pop-up? I'm like, next week, let's do that.
Yeah.
So like, so from there, then I was like, I always wanted to have fries on the menu. So I'm like hand cutting my own fries, thinking like that's the way to go. And it was fine for like the time being. So yeah, I would pop up in my driveway probably like 6 to 7 times. And then like the 7th time, there was about like 100 people down the block. It was just like mayhem. People were like bringing their own beer, just like drinking online. And like, like I said, I lived in an 8-person like townhouse and I lived at the end of my driveway and all my neighbors were cool. But eventually like, some of my neighbors kind of wanted peace and quiet. And
they're just like, people. This is getting a little.
There's people everywhere just like drinking, partying.
A keg party. Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, now is the time when I need to branch out and take this like serious. So I knew friends at work that just like offices in El Segundo, and I knew a lot of people who owned breweries, but at the time breweries were only, or like the city of LA was only allowing food trucks to go to breweries. So I couldn't do that, even though everything I was doing was illegal. So like, it's not like if I went to a brewery, it would have made any difference, because yeah. I didn't have any health permit. I didn't have any business license. You know, I wasn't like legit whatsoever. It's just guerrilla, like, how do I survive and continue to feed my family and pay bills?
Yeah.
And, you know, so I did not care one iota.
So the first time I like was aware of you, I think it was the Torrance Farmers Market where I heard about you online.
Got it.
One of those farmers markets. I don't remember which one.
But well, we never did an actual farmers market, but
it was some
I know people
event.
Reached out.
Yeah, it was some type of event or something that you were at.
We did a Sun and Sea market, yeah. which is like a kind of like a an artisan market started by a girl here in the South Bay, and she would get a lot of like artisan makers and creators.
That was it. But did you have a food truck at that time? Or you did not ever have a food truck?
Never had a food truck, and that never even came to my mind.
Yeah.
Only because a food truck is like just as expensive as a restaurant.
Yeah.
You know, and
I was going to ask you, because there's so much regulation and so
yeah.
much cost. So how do we go from a popular pop-up to this awesome location that we're sitting in right now? We're literally on the Redondo Beach Pier, and we're sort of inside of a brewery slash your smash burger spot. How did we get here?
So eventually, you know, we were able to start popping up at breweries. Mm. And luckily, pretty much no brewery, except one, asked if we had permits.
So you would just approach them, or you already knew them?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
So I, you know, coming from the PR world, we repped a lot of breweries. So I knew I was in that community. And I've just been a big craft beer fan, so I knew a lot of people in that world. So it wasn't hard for me whatsoever. To just reach out, like, yo, you know, you need a, you know, a pop up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. but you know, I'm so used to the PR world of trying to get new clients that or reach out to writers to pitch stories that like, that was all normal to me, was reaching out through DM, like Instagram DM
yeah.
or an email or a cold call. Like all that stuff was so common to me that it didn't phase me whatsoever. So yeah, so eventually we started being able to get booked at breweries, and then friends that had bars, you know. Then one day I was driving up the street in Torrance, and during like the hard lockdown period, and I just saw a big parking lot which was attached to a bowling alley, and the bowling alley, places like that just were not open.
Yeah,
you couldn't, like, any public kind of places were not open. I was like, dude, this parking lot's going to waste. Nothing's happening. So I'm like, we're just going to set up. We're just going to like set up and just see if people come out. And that turned out to be one of our like favorite like places to pop up. People just came to a parking lot. They'd bring chairs. They'd like just, you know, tailgate.
You see it with taco stands all the time.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah, exactly.
When I'm coming home at night, I'm like, ooh, taco stand.
Totally. So yeah, so we were no different than a taco stand. Yeah. And then from there, just the buzz just kept, you know, continuing and continuing. And obviously from my PR background, I knew my story had legs. Mm-hmm. I knew that was a story that people would want to share and tell. So I had so many contacts in the, you know, media world, writers, yeah. bloggers, on camera talent, that I would just reach out to them and say, hey, you know, like, remember me? You know, I was bothering you in the PR world for so long. Now, you know, now I have my own place to pitch. You know,
yeah.
This is my story. And they were like, hell yeah, let's do it. So we were, luckily with that, I was able to get on a lot of big platforms
yeah,
like
yeah,
NBC
it's a,
and
it's
stuff
a
like that.
It's a great story. I mean,
yeah.
It sells itself. So we're here at Project Barley now. Project Barley is obviously one of the breweries you connected
yeah,
with.
Yep.
And now you've got this permanent setup here. So was Project Barley already here on the pier, and then you came in and did
So we popped up at their brewery and down in Lomita maybe like a handful of times.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
And then something happened where I think the landlord of that brewery or that whole like land just didn't want us there. I guess he thought it was like a nuisance, so we stopped going there. So we weren't in contact with those guys for a while. And then I guess sometime between that, they acquired this space.
Okay.
Back in last September. And it was probably towards December when they reached out to us and said, hey guys, like, we have this space on the pier. It comes equipped with a kitchen. And as soon as you told me, I knew the space because this was like a Basque, it was called a Basque kitchen back in the day.
I've eaten here a few times. Yeah. It was like a Spanish.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
But I think it was Asian owners. And then they had this chalk out front. You could write chalk on the, yeah,
correct.
I remember this spot.
Yeah. There was a husband and wife, the wife's Asian. Bernard, who was like the other owner slash chef, he ran all of Terranea's kitchens.
Wow.
Yeah. So this was one of our clients back in the day. So I knew the space like immediately, and I knew the kitchen, like it was a little fuzzy, but I knew the kitchen would work well with what we were doing.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have 20 things on the menu, you know? Yeah. So they're like, listen, there's a kitchen here. We haven't had too much luck with it. You know, we're a brewery, so we don't really know what to do with it or how to make money from it. It's available if you want it, basically. Yeah. And so I was like, let's consider it, you know?
All right, Matt, let's actually talk about the menu at Proudly Serving, because one of the things I love about it is like it's simple but done really well. So there's not a ton of choices on the menu.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about what you offer? And then also another cool thing you do is every once in a while you'll throw in like this pop-up dish. So maybe talk about some of those and maybe some plans you have in the future with that.
Yeah, I mean, at the heart of it, we're a burger joint, you know, like that's really like what we are, you know. It's funny, it's so weird when people come here, like maybe who either don't know us or they're just walking down the boardwalk or whatever the case may be, and they're like, oh, really? That's all you have on the menu? And I'm like, have you ever been to In-N-Out?
Yeah.
You know, it's like two things. They're like, what are you talking about? Like, is this so unique to you? You've never seen this before? And I'm like, yeah, it's so, and when people get upset about it, they're like, a burger place that doesn't have vegan options. I'm like, again, In-N-Out. Like they don't have vegan options. They're probably never will. I'm like, so it's a simple menu of burgers and fries. But luckily, what helps us separate ourselves from like every other burger place that's simple is that my, you know, business partner and chef, Kevin Malone, you know, we worked together when I was in PR. And he would run like ridiculous restaurants and do ridiculous food menus, you know, way beyond burgers and fries. So with his talent, we're able to like throw together like other burger options, like say like a special on a weekend, we'll do like a chili burger, or he's done like a jalapeno popper burger.
Yeah.
But it's not like we're not using like really shitty ingredients. Like we're not like getting canned chili, or we're not using a shredded cheese in a bag or whatever the case may be, or like just, you know, for the jalapeno popper burger, we're not just getting like Philadelphia cream cheese, you know, because he's like, listen, if we're gonna do something, I'm making it.
Though it's off script, it's still the quality standards you guys have.
Yeah, like our brunch burger that we're gonna start having on every Sunday, you know, he makes bacon jam, and then instead of just like throwing a regular egg on there, you know, he made a egg yolk jam, which he just, you know, puts a lot of egg yolks into a sous vide, so keeps that a certain temperature, makes it nice and like creamy, just like your perfect egg yolk, basically. Yeah. And so it's small things like that, but our dedication to the quality that we want to pump out. You know, at the end of the day, yes, it's just a simple, like a roadside burger, I guess is the best way of explaining it. You know, but then we go a little bit above and beyond. We're not going to have just your typical fry. We toss ours in duck fat along with our tater tots. And that gives like exceptional flavor. So it's just small little things that we do. And we have a baking component. I've always loved to bake. I'm not going to call myself a baker by any means, but I know how to make an awesome chocolate chip cookie. And
my son loves that chocolate chip cookie.
And I
made like a burger and a cookie. That was like heaven for him.
And I like making this olive oil, this orange olive oil cake that everyone fell in love with. So that like is on the menu pretty often. Just rant like simple things, but like delicious, like a like coffee cake is on there. And then we hired a, like a local baker to come join our team, and she's been awesome. So like I get to think of stuff that I think is cool that I probably would, it would take a long time for me to execute, but she can just do it like that. So like we made these like mock oatmeal cream pies, which people fell in love with. Yeah, like coffee cake and all that kind of stuff. So like, yeah, we're just, so burger, fries, dessert, you know?
And I think it fits in well with the Redondo Beach Pier because it's very different than what else is offered here. I think 90% of people probably go to Quality Seafood.
Exactly.
Or they go to R10, which is, you know, one of those menus that's got everything in the world on it. So yeah, just a simple smash burger spot, high quality burger, affordable price. You're going to get it here. And the brunch burger is amazing.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago.
We had our meetup here. So
There's so much potential for this pier. It's a shame for so long. It's kind of like an afterthought. Like, you know, I lived up the street for the last 12 years and I literally come down here twice a year, maybe.
Yeah. It's funny you say that. Cause when we had our meetup here like a month ago, all the people that came, almost none of them had been here before. Or they'd only been here once and they had problems finding it.
Yep,
and they're like, and for me, since I lived down the street, I was like, oh, that's weird. I thought everyone knew Redondo Beach Pier. I thought everyone came down here a lot.
You know? Yeah. It's just not like there's truly nothing on here that would make someone drive from say Pasadena.
That's true.
Oh, what, a little fish market? That's great, you know, and the fish is awesome, but I'm sure they can find something similar closer.
Yeah.
You know? You know, I honestly, but I never knew how many people actually go on, like, on these paddle boats and stand up paddling and all that kind of stuff and the glass bottom boat and whale watching.
It's so overlooked, yeah.
Yeah, I just never thought about it. And I live so close and I come here and I stare at the harbor or the marina every day, all day, and I see how many people actually utilize it. So people are coming here, but I think there needs to be more of a reason.
Because to your point, if you're in Pasadena or downtown, you're going to drive out here. Most people are going to be going to Hermosa or Manhattan, which is right next to Redondo.
Yeah.
So it's really cool. I was telling you offline that, you know, the Visitors Bureau of Redondo's got a lot of big plans for this place. I do hope they keep the charm of it, though, because it's kind of cool to go to a place that's like still looks like it did 20 years ago, but also have the options of fun activities and great restaurants. You know,
for sure. Yeah,
you know, not like a Starbucks on every corner or something.
Yeah, no, totally. It'd be it'd be cool if a lot of really cool independent places could open up here.
Yeah.
But you know, time will tell. We'll see. I hope that we, you know, my true goal is that we can be that pioneer or that progressive place that starts that movement. Because I have other concepts in mind as well down the line. Aside from just a burger place. So possibly, you know, we can have another concept on the pier, you know, so, and hopefully that attracts other talent to come down here and open up stuff. So,
yeah, like, I mean, it's almost like these places you see that are food halls and they attract a bunch of different vendors, but this would be even cooler because it's on a pier. It's not just
a
food hall.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm assuming that you're a big fan of burgers. So I wanted to ask you about burgers in LA, besides probably serving, because LA has such a rich history.
Yeah.
In fact, they claim the cheeseburger was invented in Pasadena. We've got all these fast food restaurants that came out of here, In-N-Out, McDonald's, Carl's Jr., the list goes on and on. So besides probably serving, what are some of your favorite burger spots, or who do you think really does burger well in Los Angeles?
For a while, when I think it was Ernesto from Umami, who left and opened up Plan Check.
Mm.
He opened up the first Plan Check on Saltell. When I had that burger, I thought that thing was probably one of the best burgers I've ever had in my life.
Really?
Yeah, it's changed a little bit because he's since left.
Oh.
He was the inventor of ketchup leather.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, it's like almost like a fruit roll-up made of ketchup. And it was his thought behind it was like to not make the bun like soggy from ketchup. And it's like, first of all, you shouldn't be putting that much ketchup on a burger to make your bun like soggy. But anyway, you know, it was a cool little viral thing before like things went viral.
Yeah.
But the burger itself was just ridiculous. So that was like my favorite, I guess, high-end burger.
Mm-hmm.
I love places like Apple Pan.
Oh yeah. Classic.
And Pie and Burger in Pasadena. I love a good like diner burger, even though I grew up, I mean, I grew up eating White Manna burgers, but it wasn't in my neighborhood whatsoever. I had to like drive out of my way to go there. Luckily, I eventually got a job where I was delivering. I was a delivery driver and my route was near it, so I ate it a lot more often. But I always loved those pubby style burgers.
Yeah, Apple Pound's a really good one. Classic. Yeah. When I used to live near there, I would go there all the time. Sometimes it's hard to get a seat because they have that small little counter.
But I love that. I love the ambiance.
Definitely worth it. Okay, great. Those are some great ones. You know, I've never been to Plancheck. Unfortunately, you're saying it's not as good as it used to be, but
yeah,
I definitely think I'll still try it out.
But I mean, who knows? Maybe things have changed. It's been a few years since I've been there.
Now, let's jump back into Proudly Serving. So, you know, this has all happened for you very quickly. I mean, one day I'd kind of heard about you on social media. The next thing you know, you're opening up the spot on Redondo Beach Pier. It looks like you guys are going to get bigger and bigger. So, like, big picture, best case scenario, where would you like to see Proudly Serving in 3 to 5 years, let's say?
I'd love to have 3, maybe 4 locations. Mm-hmm. I'd love to be a leader in this industry. That's really my goal. Not just as a restaurateur opening up several locations, I truly want to be a leader among people.
Okay.
I want to have, employees who look up to me, not just as a business owner, but as a person. Being able to employ somebody is such an honor and such a it's a huge weight on your shoulders.
Yeah.
But it's I take pride in it, mm-hmm. that someone can go home and feed their family and can enjoy life and can have, say, benefits, and I'm the person that can provide that. I think it's incredible, you know? So I want to have young kids coming in here where this is maybe their first job, and to see what that looks like and what having responsibility looks like. And I want, I want somebody from, a family who maybe has a lot of kids or they're down on their luck. And if I can provide for them, that's really that's where I want to see myself.
Yeah.
And so obviously this business, this concept has a lot of legs where it can certainly grow. You can, I guess, quote unquote, franchise this pretty easily. So this has the most potential to employ a lot of people, and I hope I get that opportunity to do that. So that's really the goal for 3 to 5 years and beyond.
Yeah.
Just keep growing.
Those are awesome goals, and you're definitely on your way there with how fast things have moved already.
Appreciate it.
All right, so let's jump it back into Los Angeles. This is something I like to ask my guests, especially ones who've been in LA for a while like you. So from getting up to going to bed, what would you do and where would you go for your perfect dream day in Los Angeles? Can you describe that for us?
See, if you asked me this question 4 years ago, completely different because I didn't have kids or I didn't have a kid, you know? So now it's a little bit different. But let's say it was just me and I had the whole day to myself, depending on what time of year it was, I'd probably like to hit a day game at Dodger Stadium.
Nice.
I'd love, either before or after that game, I'd love to hit Highland Park Brewery. It's one of my favorite breweries in LA. Probably hit the Chinatown location because it's right outside the ballpark. I would love to go to a place like the Mint later that evening for some jazz. I love sitting in a dark, moody place and drinking wine or whiskey and listening to jazz. I think that's such... And there's such a strong jazz component in LA, mm-hmm. but it's still sort of like hidden. It's still sort of underground.
Yeah.
And then late at night, I'd probably end up in downtown LA somewhere because of my love of the city. Mm-hmm. And now there's so many cool little hidden bars.
So many.
In the Arts District and whatnot, or go to a cool rooftop. Like there's so many cool rooftops in LA now. But yeah, that would be a day if I was single. Now that I have a 2-year-old, Wake up, go to Disneyland, spend most of the day there. We have season passes, so we're there pretty often.
Nice.
And he absolutely loves it. Probably hit up like a cool little like park after, because he's super active. This kid can't sit still.
Yeah.
So we need to go to a place like Disney where he can just run and be himself. But yeah, so there's too many awesome things to do in LA.
Yeah, it's
to have that one perfect day, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's so wild to me when living down here in the South Bay, when people say, or if I'm having a conversation with somebody and they're like, yeah, man, I haven't been to Hollywood or downtown LA in like 6 years. And I'm like, how does that happen?
Yeah.
How do you wake up every day, sit or do something in the same like mile radius
exactly
for 6 years? I just blows
when you have
my mind.
All this available to you.
This is LA. People fly all over the world to visit LA, and you're sitting here on your same backyard on the same block doing the same thing. For me, life's too short. I just need to go out and explore. Obviously, these days, now that I'm working so much and running a business, those opportunities are few and far between, but still, any opportunity I get, I want to go down to San Diego or, you know, go out to Palm Springs or drive up to Santa Barbara and go drink wine, you know, or go to the mountains. So it's so wild how many cool things there are to do in just an hour drive outside of New York City, Los Angeles. But this is like, to me, this is one of the most perfect places to live.
Well, that's great. I appreciate that answer, because that's like our number one goal with this account, is just to promote that and try to encourage people to be a tourist in your own town and take advantage of all this stuff. And
totally.
Also, and to get myself to do it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is like the perfect place for staycations.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
All right, so you got one of the best smash burgers in Los Angeles, in my opinion. I come down here all the time, as you know.
Appreciate it.
Where's the best place for other people to go to learn more about Proudly Serving and come down and give you guys a visit?
I guess our website. Okay. Or Instagram. Mm-hmm. Instagram is Proudly Serving LA. If you were looking for our Instagram for the last 5 days, it was hacked.
Yeah, I noticed that.
So,
I was gonna shoot you a message.
So that would have been a bummer if you were looking for it then. But that's like, you know, and not to dive into that whole thing, but, you know, in this world, 2022, for the most part, social media is like almost the end all be all for restaurants or almost any business. Mm-hmm. And that's like, they live and breathe that and they rely on that for their marketing, their communication, everything. And so like when that went down 5 days ago or 6 days ago, it was just like panic set in, like immediately. Brutal. 'Cause like now it's like our livelihood is done. Like we don't get an opportunity to promote a new menu item or let people know what we're doing tomorrow, or just say thank you to people, you know?
It's definitely the lifeline.
But that was and still continues to be our main platform for communication and letting people know what we're doing on a daily basis. So Proudly Serving LA on Instagram. Our website is www.proudlyservingla.com, and that's where you can like buy t-shirts and merch and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I would say just those two places.
All right, guys, you heard what he said. Follow him on Instagram. It's where they do all the updates, especially with those secret menu items that they come out with every once in a while. If you want to have one of the best smash burgers in LA, come out this summer, come down to the Redondo Beach Pier and check out Proudly Serving.
Boom.
Thanks so much, Matt.
Thank you.
Appreciate you, brother.
Yes, sir.
Take care. Okay, welcome back, guys. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Matt as we took an inside look into his LA entrepreneurial journey with Proudly Serving Burgers, the smash burger sensation that has taken the South Bay by storm. I highly recommend you come out to Proudly Serving and try some of their delicious burgers for yourself. They have a great location right here on the Redondo Beach Pier, overlooking the water. So super dope spot to come out during the summer, enjoy a delicious burger and a cold beer at the on-site brewery.
If you want to keep up with Proudly Serving, you can follow them on Instagram at ProudlyServingLA or on their website, ProudlyServingLA.com. Okay, guys, Proudly Serving is one of my favorite burger spots, and of course, I highly recommend you try them. But despite being popular for Mexican food, Los Angeles is known for more than just amazing tacos. We have tons and tons of amazing burger places spread out all over LA. So for this episode, I'm just going to share a few other similar smash burger, pop-up, guerrilla-style burger spots around the city that have created a big buzz and you might want to add to your list. So first off, we got to go with Burgers Never Say Die. This is one of the original pop-ups that started in a driveway but got so popular they had to open up a physical spot. Now you can get their simple but delicious smash burgers at their permanent location in Silver Lake. Next up, we have The Window. This is one of my absolute favorite places to grab a casual burger. They use super high quality meat, but the price is very inexpensive, with a regular cheeseburger being less than $4. And a double cheeseburger is only $6.50. Just like it sounds, you rock right up to the window to order your food. I've been to the original Venice location, but they now have another Venice location right on the boardwalk, as well as a new spot in Silver Lakes for three locations total. Really, really great burger. Check out The Window. Okay, third one we have is Heavy Handed. This is a smash burger food truck that Angelenos absolutely love. If you don't believe me, just Google their reviews. What makes them great, like most of the spots in this list, is the simplicity without sacrificing the quality. In fact, some people say smash burger, simple burger, gourmet burger, no matter what it is, the best burger they've ever had, period. So make sure you check out Heavy Handed. So guys, there are so many great burgers in LA. It's really weird for me to just name three, but this podcast would never end if I tried to name them all. So definitely check out those three, but go ahead and explore the other amazing burger spots we have in Los Angeles. If you want more great LA burger recommendations, go all the way back and listen to episode number 27, where I interviewed Lawrence Longo. He owns the Off the Menu restaurant app, but he also did a stunt a few years back where he tried a different LA burger every day for one full year. Yes, 365 burgers in 1 year. So he really knows the LA burger scene well, and he shares a lot of recommendations and inside information in that interview way back in episode number 27. All right, guys, that's all I got. If you love burgers, go try a new one today. Go check out Proudly Serving in Redondo Beach. Go check out some of these other recommendations, and you will realize, just like we have, that LA has one of, if not the best burger scene in the world. Take care, and I'll talk to you again soon.